This workshop is about navigating the complexities of relationships in ministry, which is a really important and prevalent issue. And I know we were already asking some questions about that kind of thing yesterday. And it always comes up, whether you're a pastor's wife or a woman who is a leader in ministry in another capacity. So Susan Wesley is going to teach on that today, and then we'll have the same format as we did yesterday, some Q&A time. I'll come up to kind of facilitate that, and then we'll do small group discussion again. But I want to introduce Susan to you. She is a treasure. That's what I would say about her first. See, look at that. I got an amen on that even. We all hope that our daughters will say that about us one day, so that's good. She is a pastor's wife. Her husband Bruce is on the Acts 29 board. They are at Clear Creek Community Church in Houston, and the church is 22 years old, so she's been doing this for a while, and I have really enjoyed getting to know Susan over the last few years. She has a lot of wisdom and life experience. She's a mom. She's a grandma now. Yay! So she is wonderful, and I am thrilled that she agreed to talk on this topic. I think it will be very encouraging and challenging. So I'm going to pray for her briefly, and then she's going to come up and teach. Let's pray together. Thank you so much for all the women in this room, for what you're teaching us, for how you're challenging us, Lord, with your word and your truth and encouraging us. God, we just pray for Susan that you would bless her as she comes to speak today. I pray that you would use her mightily. God, we thank you for all of her wisdom and life experience, and I pray that you would help us to learn from that today. And we pray that you would bring questions to our minds that might be helpful to ask. And God, we thank you that you're always with us, and we ask you to speak to us in this time. In Jesus' name, amen.
So, like she said, I'm married to Bruce. We've been married for 32 years. I got married when I was 20. It's very young, so I'm 53, so you don't have to do math. We have three grown daughters. And they're all married. Our youngest got married in April, and she is actually here. Her husband serves on a staff in Houston as an executive pastor. So it's a great joy for me to get to share this time with her as well and her husband. I love my son-in-laws. That's a thing that you, I'm sure, are praying for. That makes a big difference. I have three wonderful son-in-laws. When we started Clear Creek in 1993, some of you were probably still nursing at that time. I feel like I'm like right here. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. anyway, 1993, our children were 3, 5, and 7. And so we moved to League City in August of 1993, and we launched on October 31st. We took all of 6 weeks to prepare to plant this church with people we did not know. So we've learned a lot about church planting. How not to do things. I serve on staff. I've been on staff at Clear Creek for the last 12 years. I am basically the person on our staff who meets with women when they call the office and they're in crisis. And so I am that person that will meet with women in hard times and for spiritual direction, for prayer. And then I oversee our People in Need ministry, which is a benevolence ministry. So I work part-time doing that, which we know there's no such thing as part-time, right? Just so you'll know. I wasn't raised in church. I became a Christian when I was 16 years old. I was raised in Austin and didn't really know anything about God, the Word, the church. I went to Howard Payne University, which is a small Baptist school in Brownwood. And some of you have heard of Howard Payne. Wow. Oh. Stingham jackets win. It's embarrassing. That is what, you know, like Aggies, this is what we do. Anyway, so in New Testament survey with Dr. Rainey, who was my favorite professor at Howard Payne, I remember sitting in that class with him and reading through the book of Acts. And there was a passage in Acts that we read that really struck me, and I'm going to read it to us now. It's in Acts 2, 42 through 47. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all of the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. What a beautiful picture. I remember being so struck by that, thinking, that is what I want to be about. That's what I want to be in that community. I want to experience that. I want to know that. So this New Testament church picture that we see is beautiful. You think about that. Glad and generous hearts, prayer, fellowship, favor with all the people. My favorite word in that passage is awe. And have you ever been awed? That's just such a rich word. I think we all really long for that. We all long to be in a community where we are known and loved, where we know and love people, we love and serve people. We live with such commonality and authenticity and transparency that there's a watching world out there that sees that and they're drawn to Jesus because of that. And that's a very compelling picture. But the reality sometimes is that we as leaders feel very disconnected and lonely. And we can feel very challenged by the relationships that we share with people in our church. Is it even possible for us as leaders or as pastors' wives, can we have these deep, soul-nourishing relationships with people in our churches? Well, for the next few minutes, and I'm going to start my timer now. Should have done that earlier, sorry. For the next few minutes, we have 30 minutes. Is that right, Amy? Okay. I'll try to keep it to that. But I just want to share with you a little bit of some of my own struggles, some of my own temptations that I have faced in this relational, complexity within the church. As people who believe the gospel, we know that one of the reasons why we struggle so much is because of the fall, right? So Genesis 3, when sin entered the world, it affected every aspect of our lives. We live in a very broken world. And I'm a broken person, and I deal with my own sinfulness. I struggle with pride and unbelief and selfishness every single day. And so we know that's true, but then I think, well, Acts 2, that was after the fall. These people experienced that community in a broken world. So there's some things that we can learn as Christians and as followers and as leaders about how to live life together even after the fall. So I have found that relationally, the biggest struggle that I have is me, is my own struggle. It is because I forget who I am and I forget whose I am. Being a leader in the local church is hard work, and one of the hard things about it, I think, is that it's very ambiguous work. We're not standing at a conveyor belt producing widgets, are we? It's hard to know. What do you do? Well, whatever needs to be done, right? Isn't that? I mean, it's hard. It's ambiguous, and it's hard to know what we're doing and how to define that. A pastor's wife recently asked me, "Where is the job description for this?" And I remember thinking that very same thing. When I became a Christian, I had never heard of a pastor's wife. I didn't know that was a thing, And so I'd never seen one or met one until I was one, really. And so it's a very ambiguous kind of hard thing to define. And because of that, when people come to our churches, some knowingly and some unknowingly, they bring with them a set of expectations, don't they? About you as a pastor's wife or you as a ministry leader. And oftentimes they expect us to know more than we do. And they expect us to be more than we are. And that's hard to live with. They may treat you like you're special. They may put you on a pedestal. They may think that you have this special knowledge or this access to God. People that call you and want you to pray because they think somehow you have this, direct line. And they do think that, right? They think that you got the red phone in your office or whatever. And those expectations can, and living on a pedestal can sometimes feel nice and a little bit intoxicating. It's nice to be treated special. But what we know about living on a pedestal is that you don't live there for very long. because we're all going to fall off of it. You know, we're all going to tumble off of that pedestal. None of us is, free from the temptation to sin. We're all apt to fall and all apt to sin. And so we have to be careful with living on a pedestal and living underneath those expectations. A particular conversation that I had with a woman in our church who was in our core that was part of Clear Creek when we first started. She was in our living room. She was probably the strongest leader I had ever seen, just really strong and gifted. And so we had a lot of conflict when Clear Creek started. And she sat on my couch, and she was really upset about some decisions that Bruce had made. And she said, "Susan, you know, I can rally the troops, and you and Bruce will be gone." And I remember thinking, you know, that pit in your stomach, like, she's probably right. And she probably could. She's very wealthy, very powerful. And in retrospect, what I think is that she saw this church plant as her and her husband's small business, and Bruce and I were their employees. And I really tended to sort of live into that. You know, I actually even went to work for them. Really bad idea, you know? And so those expectations on me, I was unaware of what all was going on in that dynamic. One of the things that's been helpful for me is that I realized that I also bring a set of expectations to relationships. You know, I used to think that I was just on the receiving end of all of that, and I realized, no, I kind of do that too. And maybe you can relate to this. You know, you see somebody, a new face in your gathering, people that you're around that come to church on a Sunday morning, and you think, she looks like she could work with kids. Yeah. We're going to have coffee this week. Yeah. Yeah, right. We do that, don't we? We size people up, you know, or, you know, what's worse is, you know, she looks like she has money. We definitely need to talk, right? And so, you know, but we do. We size people up, and we have an expectation on them. And that's a really kind of a dark thing, that we kind of see people and regard people from the flesh. I realize that we are all recruiting and enlisting, and we have a mission and we have a vision, and that's good. But it's in this context that I'm tempted to see people that are made in God's image solely as the sum of what they can contribute to our mission. And so this is where I have to go to God's word, and I have to let God's word define me and define the people before me. In 1 John 3:1, it says, "See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are." I hope that stirs your heart. By the cross of Christ, we were delivered from the domain of darkness and brought into his kingdom of his beloved Son and made his children. My family of origin was a mess. And so when I came into the family of God, it was wonderful for me, but it was also hard for me because I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to live with a perfect father. I didn't know how to live with brothers and sisters. It took me a lot of time to learn how to do that. Like a lot of the people that are in your churches, it's going to take them a lot of time to learn how to do that, to learn that we have a perfect father who loves you and has your hair numbered, the hairs on your head numbered, who doesn't look at you and see your sin, who loves you so much, is intimately aware of every part of your life. That is the Father that we have. He's a perfect Father who can be trusted. If this is something that you struggle with believing, if there's just something in that, when I say those words to you and you think, yeah, now she's just, you know, preaching, right? That I'm not sure I believe that. I hope that you will take the time to sit in that and really know that you are loved by God as a daughter, not for what you bring to the church plant, to the ministry, to anything. You are a loved daughter. We are made his children, and we have a common father. It's a really simple way of seeing things, but I'm a simple girl, so he made us his children, and he made us a people. In 1 Peter 2:9 and 10, it says, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but you have received mercy. No special caveat for ministry leaders or pastors' wives. You are children, his children. No job titles, no job descriptions, no accolades and accomplishments there. His children. And you may serve from a role of leadership. You may have a position where you are serving right now, and that's wonderful. But anything that is an addition to being a daughter and a sister, I want to encourage you to hold that with very loose hands. Because you're a daughter first, and you're a sister in a family. And we can't ever lose sight of that. We can't let the ministry make us lose sight of that identity. So, do you believe that you're a child of God first, who is called to love? Do you believe that? And do you find your identity in something else? Do you see yourself as a daughter, and do you see the people of your body as your brothers and sisters? Because we all have voices in our head, right? Yes? I mean, I'm not the only one that has voices in my head, right? Please tell me. Then you're going to escort me off the stage. We all do have voices in our head. And these voices are either confirming our identity in Christ or they're distracting us from our true identity and telling us lies. And maybe you could consider this. What does your voice sound like in someone else's head? Because your voice is in someone's head, whether it be your children, your friend at work, the person that you minister with on Sundays, maybe some of your discipling. Your voice is in her head. And is it affirming her identity in Christ? Is it encouraging her to walk as a daughter and as a sister? So one of the ways that I can know if I'm living in my identity is conflict. Now, I know probably none of you have any conflict in your life, but I'm a people pleaser and an approval addict. So just admitting that now, but hopefully I'm in some recovery. At 53, I should be getting better at least. But when you're a leader, it's important that you know what your sin patterns are and what your flesh patterns are, what you're tempted to do when conflict arises. You know, you may not be tempted to be a people pleaser or an approval addict. You know, you may be more tempted to avoid. I'm going to avoid all the conflict I can. I'm just going to pretend like that's not happening. I'm going to go home and watch Netflix for hours, right? Isn't it? Whatever, you know, escape. Or maybe you power up on people or you manipulate people. You're one of those people who can get other people to do what you want them to do and they don't even know it. I've always been a little envious of that. But, or, you know, maybe you get angry and you blow up. And so you're the people that people avoid because of your anger. We all have ways of dealing with conflict, don't we? You know, and as a pastor's wife, sometimes people say, well, I'm going to pull out that pastor's wife badge. It's like, don't you know who I am? You know, that's ugly. And that's hopefully we're not doing any of that. But in our conflict, which is inevitable, it has a powerful advantage for us because it helps us see what's going on in us. The conversation that I told you about a minute ago on my couch in my living room was a tool that God used to show me some things about myself. I was not raised in church. I lost my mom when I was young in death. And so I spent the better part of my 20s and 30s looking for a mother. My gosh. Sounded scary. So anyway, sorry. I was like very distracted, shiny. I'm a little ADD. But I spent like a lot of time looking for a mom. Now, if you had asked me at that time, I would have never said that's what I was doing. I didn't know that I was doing that. But any woman that was 10, 12, 15 years older had way too much sway over me. It was kind of a undue influence, and this woman did. And so, you know, what I wanted from her was this mother relationship. And so I was seeking something in her, and she was seeking some power and control, and those things just meshed really in an ugly way. And I didn't see that that was what was going on. I didn't know it. But I had an agenda. I had a desire. I had a desire for something from her. She had a desire for something from me. And that we both had an agenda, but neither were God's agenda. It was just my agenda, and I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And so I was going to try to keep the peace with her as much as I could because I was getting something from this relationship. Very ugly, very dark, very complicated, really. You know, I didn't see that I was doing that. And we know a lot more, don't we, in looking back, in retrospect. Conflict has a way of revealing what's in my heart and what, you know, what's in our hearts, doesn't it? When I get squeezed and pressed and pushed, what is in my heart will eventually, it will come out. And unfortunately, conflict doesn't always give us, we don't always have a warning signal. I had a daughter, one of my middle daughter, when she would be about to throw up, she would go, "Mom, my throat hurts." And I had about 3 seconds to respond. And you know how that is. You're in the car. It's always in the car. Always in the car. What I don't know what that is, but that's how conflict is with us. You know, it just catches us off guard. We don't see it coming, and there we are. One of the practical things that I want to share with you is something that we started at Clear Creek early on, and we call it Monday Conversations. So conflict never comes at an opportune time. It's always right when you're about to, you know, have an event, throw a party, do a have a service on a Sunday morning, and somebody comes to you, they're angry, it's a volatile conversation. And so one of the things that we say is, we can talk about this, but we're going to talk about this on Monday. It's not pushing it under the rug, you're not saying that you don't care about what's going on in their life, but a lot of heartache, because frankly, I don't know about you, but sometimes I will react poorly in those environments because I'm not thinking about your conflict. I don't really care what you think right now. I'm really, you know, I'm thinking about what else is going on right now. So and when you respond like that, it doesn't work very well, right? So if I just say, this is a good conversation that we're going to have on Monday, and it doesn't have to be on a Monday, but it just, the point is that it's another day, and you make a point of having that conversation. That was a really helpful tool for us. It really helps you practice James 1:9. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. How much conflict could be avoided if we did that? God in his mercy provides us some very straightforward ways to deal with conflict. The Matthew 18 passage, we all know that. You know, if your brother sins against you, go to him and talk to him and tell him his fault. And if he listens to you, you've won your brother. Jesus gives us some really good considerations in Luke 6:41. So why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but don't take the log out of your own eye? Boy, that's just a picture, isn't it? Peeking over this log to look at somebody's speck, you know. Good things for us to consider when we're in conflict with someone. Galatians 6:1. Brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Gentleness is a word that I love that word. I think it just implies so much that is so contrary to our culture today. And a trend, I'm really going to sound old. What I see happening today, you know, is this all the time, right? I mean, this is what we do. And I'm the worst. I mean, I'm bad. My husband thinks I'm addicted to my phone, so... technology is a wonderful thing. It's a great way to encourage people, to love people, to celebrate people. It's a great way to share information. It is a terrible way to resolve conflict. So I really want to encourage you, if you're on a string of texts, if you're on an email, if you receive an email bomb, do not respond in kind. You know, I got a text last night from a girl. And it was clouded in, you know, she's upset. And it was amazing how that turned my whole evening, you know. It just turned my whole, and I had to go, okay, just take a breath. I just said, I will talk to you about this later. Email and text messages and Facebook are great ways to encourage people and love on people. They're terrible ways to resolve conflict. So pick up the phone, get eyeball to eyeball, and have a conversation. I know that sounds like I'm an old person, and I am. But we can be incredibly bold and say things that we probably would never say in person when we are behind a screen. And that's it's just not, it's not godly, and it's not really what God would have us to do. We need to have eyeball-to-eyeball conversations with people. All right, I'm going to step off my soapbox. The church, as a church, we must learn to relate to one another honestly and gently with grace and truth. And I really do think that this is one of those things that the watching world will see and be drawn to Jesus by, when we learn how to resolve conflict in God-honoring ways. So conflict is a sanctifying tool, and it's an opportunity for you to see what's in your own heart, what's in my heart. It's an opportunity for us if we let it be. Ask God for wisdom in resolving conflict. He is the source of all of our wisdom. Ask him for wisdom all the time because we need it. And when you're resolving conflict, you definitely need it. Be a person of grace because you have received grace. Be a person of grace and forgive readily and repeatedly as you have been forgiven. So my last encouragement for you today is to embrace fully the people that are living before you. Don't hold back. Don't get into this self-protective mode of, I'm going to make sure that I don't get hurt. Be all in wherever you are. Be all in. For some of us, that may feel really scary. You know, we had a really negative church experience before we went to Clear Creek and jumped into another really negative experience. And, you know, that lasted for a few years. It's not like that now. So I know what it's like to be hurt and want to just recoil. I understand that. But I want to encourage you to be brave and be all in. Wherever you are, be all in. Don't hold back. Embracing your community may look like you lay down some of the expectations that you've brought to your community. And, you know, those expectations may just be from your own experiences or what you have interpreted out of God's word, whatever. But sometimes we just have to lay down our expectations. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote a book called Life Together. Highly recommend this book. It really changed how I think about community. It's really helpful. It's really thin, too. So, but he wrote this book, and he says in this book, he speaks to this issue of expectations, and he says, he calls them a wish dream. So he says, every human wish dream that is injected into the Christian community is a hindrance to genuine community, and it must be banished if genuine community is to thrive. He who loves his dream of a community more than the Christian community itself becomes a destroyer of the latter, even though his personal intentions may be ever so honest and earnest and sacrificial. When Clear Creek started, I had a lot of wish dreams. We would have every person that visited our church, we would have them over for dinner. And so I had this idea that somehow we were all just going to live together and just have fun and hold hands and follow Jesus, you know, skipping down the Yellow Brick Road, right? And, you know, that lasted all of about 30 minutes. And so what I've realized is that I don't have to be everyone's best friend. I am not personally responsible for everyone that walks through the door. I see a lot of heads nodding. You've been there where it's like they're walking in. I have to be their friend. I have to know them. I have to know everything about them. I have to pray for them regularly. It's exhausting, and we can't do it. That's an unrealistic expectation. It really was born out of, for me, I'm not saying this about you, it's born out of a lot of pride, thinking, I can do that, and I can't. And it was helpful for me, really helpful for me, to think about Jesus when he walked the earth. He had 12 people, and really he had three that he was really close to. So this was Jesus. So I think, you know, I don't know, 50% of three is really going to be difficult. But I think we've got to give ourselves some understanding and room to not be that person, to not think that I have to be best friends with everyone that walks in the room. I learned that through pain. One of the markers of Clear Creek Community Church is longevity. You know, we have a great value for longevity. When we call people on staff, we basically say, will you marry me? I mean, this is like, we're going to live together. This is not a, you know, you're on your way somewhere else. So that's a beautiful thing. Mark and Lisa Cardin, our some of our dearest and closest friends. We vacationed with them. We raised our kids together. It was wonderful. And they have joined our staff 3 years in, and that's when really things began to improve greatly at Clear Creek. But it's a great value. But for me, it became something that I just kind of held on to. So it was like, if you came to Clear Creek, you better stay, you know? And it's like, yeah. So I had to lay down that expectation of we're going to do life together forever, you know? That's my own heart. That's not, you know, that's not from God. That was all Susan. And so, and let me say that this is an issue that probably the number one issue that I talk to pastors' wives about, church planting, how it hurts when people leave. When Clear Creek started, there was a couple that we were really, really close to. They gave a lot. They served a lot. They let us use their offices to start Clear Creek. Basically, they let us use their administrative person who was a part of their business to help Bruce. I mean, it was just like we were entrenched. Loved them. Because of so much of the conflict that was going on, they came to us one day and said, we just can't do it anymore. And they left. I was devastated. It was heartbreaking. I just remember thinking, this is really as bad as I've hurt. And they left really well. And within a year, they came back. Now, I know that that's not most of the stories. That's not most of the stories at Clear Creek. Most of the time when people have left, they've stayed gone. But I saw through that whole experience how God redeemed and restored a relationship that was really broken. And it took time. It took a lot of forgiveness. It took a lot of truth and love. But they're some of our dearest friends today. I would give them a kidney. And they love my kids. I love their kids. They're wonderful people. They're my people. I mean, I really think of them as my people. But let me just say, when people leave your church, I hope you grieve. Because if you don't grieve, you didn't love. And so it's okay to grieve. Grieve. That's grievous. When people walk away from our fellowship, it hurts. And the only way not to hurt is not to love. So it's okay to grieve. It's okay to grieve. Those deep relationships that we have with one another, they don't just happen. They're forged. They're shared meals and shared holidays and shared weddings and births and deaths. We've grieved wayward children together. We have hurt each other. We have disappointed each other. We've judged each other. We have been angry at each other. We have failed each other. When you've lived somewhere for 22 years, you have been forgiven of a whole lot. And you've forgiven a lot. That's just part of it, right? Part of being all in. So, embracing the community that you're in also requires you to have some discernment. So, have you ever trusted someone that you thought, oh, gosh, wish I wouldn't have done that? And trusted yourself to someone that you thought later on, you look back and you think, that was not a wise decision. That happens. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's okay. You know, if you trust someone that's not trustworthy, that's not on you, is it? It's on them, you know, if they're not trustworthy. It's going to happen. But don't let that keep you from trusting everyone. I think we all fall within that spectrum, right, of some of us trust no one and everyone's a threat, and some of us trust everyone and no one's a threat. And there's wisdom is sort of in the middle, and where we learn to walk by His Spirit, we learn to listen to God, and sometimes we mess that up, and that's okay. It's okay. Don't let that keep you from deep relationships with people. You need a woman in your life that will listen to your sin and not be shocked, that will look you in the eye and remind you of His mercy and His grace. You need someone that you can be that kind of honest with. And if you have that, thank God for her. And if you don't, keep at it. There's somebody out there. Ask God. ask God to provide that person. You need her. You need them. You need some people in your life that know you and know your sin and love you anyway and are not shocked by any of that. You need that. I hope you'll be all in. I hope you'll be brave. I hope you'll embrace the community that's before you. So my youngest daughter, Micah, she told me I could tell this story on her, so don't be uncomfortable. When she was 8, she had received Christ and been baptized. And so it was, we were going to gather for the Lord's Supper. And it's one of those nights, you know, as a parent, you're all excited for. You know, this is our last kid. We're all going to be in heaven together. And so we're gathering for the Lord's Supper, and her dad and I sit down. We talk to her about all the elements, what's going to happen, you know. And so we get to the church, and he's up front, and he's leading, and the elements are passed, and the cracker, you know, comes before me, and I hand it to Micah, and she takes it in her hand. She's holding it in her hand, waiting for us all to take it together. And we take it together, and she chews it up and very loudly proclaims, "That was stale." So, you know, when I raised our girls, I was always worried because of my background. I thought, they're not going to have the awe of the grace of God like I have. They're not going to have this awe of being transferred from the domain of darkness to the kingdom of his light. They're not going to know the gift of being in the body like I know. And God is so faithful because of the community that I have gotten to enjoy, they have witnessed. They've sat at our kitchen table and in our living room and listened to stories of how God brought other people from the domain of darkness to the kingdom of his beloved son. They have personally had a front row seat to what God is doing in our community. And they have awe. All three of them have awe. And I am so grateful. He's faithful to do that. But that only comes when you live in the community and you be all in. When I look at this room, I see so many young women, and it just so fires me up to see what God is doing in our community. To have this many young people in a room that care about his church so much, such a gift to us in this time, in this place, such a gift to us. Let's not take it for granted. So Amy is going to come lead us in some Q&As.
I told you she was awesome, right?
Y'all are kind.
Okay, so we're going to move to some large group Q&A time. I'm actually going to ask Susan a question first because I thought of one back there that I think is really applicable. So we have plenty of time, so be thinking of your questions. And we'll take several questions in just a minute. But you mentioned, you know, wanting to find someone to be a mother. Mm-hmm. To you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty common thing for pastors' wives and women in ministry leadership. We will have women who want that kind of mothering from us. And there's an appropriate
yes.
spiritual mothering and mentoring. But then I think what you're referring to is then there is an inappropriate, unhealthy, like, I want you to be everything that I didn't have, or yep. I want you to make up for the lack that I had in my own mother. So what would you say about what are some of the differences between appropriate and inappropriate?
Right, right. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is that, because I did have some of those really good, godly women in my life early on. When we first went into ministry, we went to Cut and Shoot, Texas. Anybody ever heard of Cut and Shoot? Lived in a trailer in Cut and Shoot. Yes. But there were some of the most godly women. I mean, Pat Parker, Florence Bailey, Dalpha Kelly, Betty Fennell. Those women, they didn't want anything from me. And I knew they didn't want anything from me. They just loved me. They showed up. They served me. They cared about me. It wasn't about what they could get from me. That other relationship, it was about, she was using me to get to my husband. And, you know, I was naive and just not very bright, evidently. So, you know, I just didn't see a lot of that. And so I think those godly women are in your churches that will make up for the lack. And as someone who didn't have that family thing, you know, I kind of always felt like an orphan. God has provided a family, and there are women today. But, I, you know, what I have found is when I sort of there was another woman that is godly, but I just wanted something from her, you know? And I just found, like, if I sensed any sense of rejection at all, man, it wrecked me. And I thought, why am I doing this? And this was, like, not that long ago, you know? So we have to just always keep our heart in check about it. Am I looking for something that maybe God is not providing in that person? So I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, and what would you say on the other end of that? So, if, like, for when we have maybe women that come to us, mm-hmm. and we feel like, something here feels a little off. would some maybe markers be there, like things to be prayerfully wise about?
Right. I think there again, you have to, you know, what are they seeking from you? Are they seeking approval from you? Are they, you know, do you like me? Do you like what I'm wearing? It gets ridiculous, doesn't it? If someone is coming to you for, you know, I need you to pray for me. I need you to help me learn how to obey Jesus in this moment. Those are some good things that we can be involved with. But if it digresses into, you know, I didn't learn how to do this, and so I need you to, you know, I need you to be my mama. And I, frankly, I get a lot of that now. You know, I do get a lot of that now. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be careful. And I don't always do that very well. So,
yeah, that's good. Yeah. Okay, questions. Somebody be brave and go first. Yes.
How do you handle when families do leave, but the woman wants to maintain the relationship that they had while they were there?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm going to repeat it real quick the audio. Yeah. How do you, if a family leaves, but the woman wants to still maintain a relationship with you, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah. So that is such a great question. I hear a lot of that. And I think two things about that. One is that if this is your sister, then obviously we're going to treat them like a sister. They're your sister whether or not they're a part of your body, right? I mean, they're still your sister. So we want to be respectful and kind. But know that I have a relational, you know, finite capacity, so I'm probably not going to be able to be involved in that kind of relationship. You know, most of you are, you know, you have very busy lives, and so you can't spread yourself that thin. I'm a very different stage in my life. And so two people that I spend a lot of time with, frankly, actually three people, used to be a part of Clear Creek, and they have left. One of them is somebody that I meet with regularly to pray for me. She's not a part of my church anymore. She doesn't live in our area anymore. That makes it a little easier. It does. But the other two, I see them regularly. One of them is I work out with her. So, you know, if there's a natural, there's a relationship there and you want to maintain it, it's okay to have that. But you don't have to have that. It's okay to say, you know, and I mean, it's like breaking up, you know. It's hard. Those are hard conversations to have when someone keeps pushing for a relationship and you're like, this isn't probably going to happen. You know, how do you say that? You know, I'm going to ignore this text for the third time, you know, this week. I know. It's just awkward. I don't know. You got something?
I mean, I've had a situation actually recently where a good friend of mine, they just needed to go somewhere else for several reasons related to her husband, kids, several reasons. And so we met for her to tell me about it. She said, please don't be mad at me. Yeah. I said, I'm not mad at you. I understand that you're doing what's best. And honestly, in some ways in this situation, you need friends who are outside of your church mm-hmm. too. And so it was, in some ways that was helpful because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, now it kind of changes the dynamic a little bit there in some ways that are helpful. But I don't know if there's a one size fits all answer to that. But I think what she said about you don't have to be friends with someone who leaves your church necessarily. You can say no. And it's kind of the owning your own relational capacity and just letting the Lord lead in that, I think. But it's awkward for sure.
It is, yeah.
I know you have questions. Yes.
I actually am in the middle of a conflict right now with a single woman in our church who kind of unintentionally I invited her into my inner circle. And, I mean, we are friends. But what I found was I didn't set some healthy boundaries there. And so the expectations, what I felt was
Go ahead, Amy.
So the question is, if you have a situation with someone who you have needed to set some boundaries with in a relationship, like their expectations were not reasonable, and you needed to clear some of that up, and then they are not, they're very hurt and having trouble honoring the boundaries, like how do you determine what your next steps are in a relationship like that?
I just think that is that's just really difficult. And, you know, I don't know that there's any right or wrong ways to do it. Sounds like you have really handled it really well. You know, I think you just keep saying the same things. Being a friend is a skill. And, you know, we have to learn how to be friends with people. And that's really part of discipleship, is learning how to live with one another in this community. And so, there are ways to maybe teach her, maybe give her some books about how to live relationally, and maybe you've already done that.
She has read all the books.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, it's inevitably the people that can quote the books, you know, right. Yeah, I just think that, you know, we teach people how to treat us, and so we have to just continue to have those boundaries and continue to honor that, and, you know, if someone's not going to respect a boundary, that's a scary thing for me. I think we have to be really careful when someone won't respect a boundary to put them in a leadership position. We need to be really careful about, because that's, you think about what the end of that looks like when someone won't respect a boundary. So it's, you know, you just keep having those conversations and keep learning. Can I recommend a book?
Yes.
So Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands by Paul David Tripp. It's an incredibly helpful book. I highly recommend it. We use it at Clear Creek all the time to teach and train people. It's a great book to learn how to live among brothers and sisters and how we talk to one another and counsel one another. So if you've never heard of that book, or even if you have and it's on your shelf, dust it off, read it. It's good.
Yes.
Yep.
So the question is, what wisdom do you have about how to use social media, really, as a pastor's wife or a woman who's a leader in ministry?
Yeah, that's such a good question, and it's a hard thing. I've struggled with that myself. I'm not a private person, but I don't put stuff out on Facebook, and I don't do a lot of that because I really just don't want that, you know. But a lot of times it's fun and it's a tool. And so I just think that we just have to really pray and ask God for wisdom and discernment about that. I mean, that's just like, I just can't even think of another way to do that. And maybe if you know, I posted something that was making fun of a pastor. So, I mean, like, literally within seconds, this girl was like, you know, I don't think this is a very, and she was right. I mean, I was completely wrong, you know. It's like, you're right, you know, racist, like, oh, what, you know. So, I mean, that was such a good thing for me to go through, because I thought, this is not worth that, you know. So, again, it's one of those things that if you're positive and it's a, you know, encouragement to people, and it's not putting someone in your family in a bad spot, you know, posting pictures of, anyway, your children, you know, make sure that you have your children's permission to post anything that you post. But I think it's just a hard thing. And, you know, some of your elders may have some parameters that you have to live with in terms of social media too, you know, because this is the world that we're in, isn't it? You know, it's very, very complicated when it comes to relationships. And a lot of people get hurt. I'm amazed at how many women will come to me and, I saw this on Facebook and they all got together and I was not there. And
yes.
I know. It's just.
I think there's a tendency, too, the other way, to come across as so perfect and so polished that no one can ever attain. And I think that's a danger, too.
Yes. Yeah. If you're going to live your life on Facebook, be real, right? I guess.
And I would just briefly add, you do have a choice yes. about whether to be on it or not. I will tell you, I am on Twitter. That's it. Barely. I am not on Facebook. I'm on none of it. And it wasn't really even intentional. It was just kind of the time that was all coming up. I think I was super busy with little kids. But honestly, since then, I've just continually reevaluated. Like, is this going to be the best use of my time right now and my influence and my and all of those things? And my husband and I talk about this line. He's on all of it. But I just keep coming back to no, it's not. And so, I mean, honestly, I tell people I'm not on Facebook. And they're like, what? But I'm not, because it, for me, in the season I've been in, it hasn't seemed to be the wisest move. And that is, you do have a choice about
yes.
being on it or not being
yes.
on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very good.
Yes, your daughter has a question.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Now I'm sweating. What are you going to say?
Well, it's just relationships. It's all relationship.
Right.
And so
yeah.
Not the excuse of being an introvert, but
if the shoe fits.
So at night you go home and you're exhausted, you're tired, but just like the what relationships have, you know, looked like that day. So when you get to the point of maybe isolation, what are some practical steps to get out of that? Because then it's kind of your fault, like your cycle.
Right.
Okay, so the question is, if you've become isolated, perhaps as a reaction of being drained in relationships, how do you move out of isolation?
Okay. Go do something really fun and get a good night's sleep. And make sure that you have a good balance of people around you that are life-giving. You know, we all have the life suckers. We know that. I mean, let's not put people in a box of that. Let's realize that they're part of the body and they're growing and they're learning and we're teaching and discipling and helping them learn not to be that person. And that's a part of discipleship, right? That's a part of learning to be godly and walk in His Spirit. But I'm limited, and we all have different capacities. Every single one of us have a different capacity. That was such a freeing thing for me, because I look at other people and think, I look at her and I think, how does she do what she does? Seriously, you blow my mind. And so I'm not Amy Patrick. I don't have that capacity, and that's okay. God didn't call me to be Amy Patrick. It's like what you were talking about. He didn't call us to be that. He called us to be who we are. And so to realize that you are a finite person with finite time and finite energy. And, you know, if someone that you love, you know, for instance, I'm the extrovert, Bruce is the introvert. And so he lets me help him because he could isolate. He lets me help him have people over. But when we were first married, I would have people over without talking to him. Not a good thing to do. And so, you know, we have finally gotten to this place where I don't just bring people home and, you know, I respect the home. So you learn to live with each other in that, but you have somebody in your life that will help you. And I sense that I have a friend that tends to isolate and will hole up in her house. I'm like, what's going on? Haven't seen you in a few days. Are you okay? You know, it's good. That's living in community, helping each other to do that. Not in a judgmental way, but a loving way. So...
Yes.
Can you speak to taking up an offense on behalf of our husbands or relationships and knowing the difference between really, you know, there's going to be those conflicts of our relationships and expecting him maybe to do something about those conflicts that we have in our own relationships with individuals?
So the question is about... taking up an offense for our husbands, sort of being offended on their behalf, but also I think what is appropriate as far as their involvement in our relational difficulties.
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, gosh. That's been the source of most of our fights, you know, those kinds of things. Because, you know, we see things so differently when it comes to relationship and how to deal with those relationship things. So that has been a tool that God has used to reveal my heart, both with my relationship with my husband and whatever's going on with the person that's before me. It is difficult. That's a difficult thing. But there have been times that Bruce has said, you know what? This person does not bring out the best in you. I don't think this is a good relationship. And so this is where I submit. And, you know, we have conversations. It's not like he lays the law down and that's how it is. But you know, he's wise. I listen to him, and he knows me. And he lives with me after I've been with that person. And so, you know, isn't that true? I mean, we have some relationships that some people just bring out the worst in us. And so it's helpful to have those open lines of key, to be able to talk about that and say, okay, you know, I know that you don't like this girl, but, you know, we really have a lot of fun together, and we like some of the same things, and, you know, but then if it gets to a place where it really causes division with my husband, then my loyalty and my priorities have already been determined, haven't they? So, but I think those are difficult things. I don't know, you might can add something to that. Sorry.
I mean, as far as taking up an offense for your husband, obviously, it's very hard to hear your husband criticized, but I've also, for me, it just depends. A lot of it is personality dependent and a lot of that, but I've had to say in a lot of ways, Darren can absolutely handle his own business. So it was towards him, it was his deal, and I have to do kind of a stepping back from that and vent, honestly, before the Lord about it. That may not be you. That's what's been helpful for me. Yeah. Yes.
Have you ever had a season in your own life where you felt a pastor's wife is a lonely journey, where at times it's hard, where you do want to open up, or at times it's like, okay, you read all these books, but at the same time, it's like, you know what the right thing to do is, but at the same time, it's like, you feel like a pastor's wife is lonely.
Yeah.
So the question is, the pastor's wife, that role is a lonely road at times. And so basically, how do you deal with that kind of loneliness in the role?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Yes, I have definitely felt that way. I think most women are lonely. It's a common thing that I hear from women is that they're lonely. And it's just interesting to me because we live in a culture that's supposedly so connected. But I think most of us are lonely. And I think we have to continue to engage, even like you said, we know the right things to do. At the same time, I think this ultimate loneliness that we all feel really is a longing for heaven. It's a longing for eternity. And that it's a longing for one day everything's going to be made right. Everything is going to be good. And there will be no more loneliness. But obviously, we're walking in flesh and blood here, and God doesn't intend for us to be lonely. So there are seasons when I have felt very alone. I think leadership is lonely. It's just lonely. It's just a lonely time. It's just people don't always understand. People always want something from you. And so that can feel really lonely at times. I don't want that to discourage you to not stay engaged in a relationship, though. Important to stay engaged.
Yes. Yeah. Just knowing that it's normal to feel lonely. So feeling lonely doesn't mean I'm doing it wrong,
right,
per se. But then you can take some steps,
yes,
when you are lonely as well. Okay, we're going to end the large group Q&A there. Again, most of you should have received a sheet on the way in that has some fodder for discussion. Use that as it's helpful to you or not, however your group is going. Susan's up here. I'm up here. If you want to come and chat about something, that's great. And then at like 12:25 or so, I'll dismiss us from the workshop.